I think we're finally on.
Yay, we're here.
We're here, and we're here with our first guest.
Our first guest. This is so exciting.
My mother, Mary Kay.
She needs a better introduction than that. Go on.
Our first guest. She's the queen. She makes it all happen. We are so alike. It's quite scary. And she's stuck with me forever. And it's my mother, Mary Kay. Hi, Mary Kay.
Hello.
Are you excited to be on the podcast?
I'm so excited, but I think the drum roll was missing.
Oh, drum roll, please. I leave one hand. MK.
There we go.
Yay.
Okay, we're going to get close because we are sharing a mic today. And I don't want the listening experience to be, hurt because we can't work GarageBand. So, part of the reason, Mom, first of all, thank you for being on the podcast.
Very welcome. Happy to be here.
Have you ever been on a podcast before?
No.
Just checking, making sure you're not doing any secret ones behind my back.
Definitely not.
Okay. Well, we have some questions, and I think part of the reason I told Alex a month ago or something, I was like, sounds crazy, but what if we interviewed our parents? And something that made me think of doing that is that not having dad and Alex not having her mom, I think when we watch home videos and I hear dad's voice and I see him do stuff, it reminds me I have a lot of that of him from a certain time period, but I would give a lot to have something more time and recorded space of him talking as an adult that I wish I had more of. And I also wanted more of you in that space. And so I was this is great for us to have just as an audio nostalgic keepsake. And I think it's something that I will cherish and listen to for a long time because unfortunately we haven't figured out how to biohack and let people live forever, you included. And so that's kind of the reason I wanted to do this is because I was kind of inspired by how dad recorded so much of our childhood and our lives and how special that's come to mean to us and to our family to go back and look at and listen to. And so all of that to say, thanks for letting us record you today.
You're very welcome. And when you figure out the biohack thing, then let me know.
Trust me, if there is a way that I can put you in a freezer and you never leave me, I'm gonna figure it out.
You know I tend to get cold, so the freezer is probably not my ideal.
Is there anywhere else you can keep her?
Could you just store me in a little warm, I don't know, sauna or something?
That sounds nice.
Yeah.
You would do much better with a sauna.
Yeah, I would.
Or a hot yoga room.
Ooh, that sounds good.
That'd be good, yeah.
Well, Mom, me and Alex both have questions for you. So I told her I just have a little list and I'm going to get going. And then if you can interject at any time with questions you feel like asking. Ready?
Ready.
First question. Where were you born?
Würzburg, Germany.
Oh, fun. I don't know if I knew that.
Give us the deets. What was the situation? Why were you born in Würzburg?
I was born in Würzburg, Germany, because Papa was stationed over there, and Mamaw was with him. They were married, and she was pregnant with me, and therefore, I came to be in Würzburg, Germany. But I was still because we were on an American military base, I am still an American citizen.
Do you also have German citizenship?
I do
or
not.
Or doesn't work like
I
that?
I do not. At one point, I think we investigated the rules of running for president.
Mm, yeah.
And I think maybe I couldn't run for president because I was born in a foreign country.
Interesting.
even though it was an American military installation. Maybe they would waive that. I don't know.
Yeah.
I feel like we did look into this one time, and I actually feel like we'll have to fact check it. But I think if you were born on an American, military base, you can still run.
Okay, well, that's good to know, because I might have to this next election.
I mean,
if we don't have better options.
Please.
MK 2024, who's in? Also, when you say Mama and Papa, that's my grandma and grandpa names for your parent.
Correct.
Just giving some context. You can touch the mic, too, if you want.
Are you the oldest?
I'm the oldest, yeah.
And you have sisters?
I do.
Kate and I, neither of us, growing up, had biological sisters. I now have a stepsister, but I was well into my adulthood when she became my sister. I don't think I would do well growing up with sisters, but I do, envy people that have sisters. I don't know if that makes sense.
Wow. What makes you think you wouldn't do well growing up with sisters?
I got everything. I was very spoiled as the only girl. I had the bedroom with the walk-in closet. I got to go to, New York to the American Girl doll store. I got to go. I felt like I got a lot of things that my brothers didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel like I would have to share all of that. And I don't feel like I would have liked that.
Right.
Did you share a lot? I mean, you were the oldest.
Yeah, I was the oldest. And I was 7 years older than my next sister. So I still kind of got things that were different.
That makes sense.
Kind of than what they got. And my youngest sister is 10 years younger than me. So honestly, she was like a little kind of a doll baby for me. And she was born when I was 10 and my father was in Vietnam. So I was like mother's little helper with her. So very different.
Yeah.
Sort of.
I feel like eldest sisters have a very distinct, a lot of them, it seems like the internet is like oldest sisters take care of so much because you're kind of like the second parent sometimes in a way, and you're responsible and you just have a little more wherewithal around you. And I feel like you have oldest sister energy.
Oh, I definitely do. I'm sort of the classic first child.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But probably being so much older also, with some of that.
Yeah.
You just already were grown up more. And yeah. So.
I was kind of pre-programmed.
Yeah.
And Papa was in Vietnam and he didn't meet Pam, her youngest sister, until she was a year old, right?
10 months old, I think. But wow. Yeah, close.
That's really crazy.
Yeah. He found out she was born and that everybody was fine by telegram.
That's crazy.
Don't make fun of me. What's a telegram?
It's a way of communicating.
Yeah.
Back in the day when you couldn't even really call Vietnam.
Yeah.
What is it? Is it a carrier pigeon? What is it?
It's not a bird, but it is sending short typed messages. It's like old-fashioned Twitter. Short typed messages.
It was more code, right?
Yeah. Almost like a code kind of a thing.
And there was an operator who would receive the message and
yes, and translate it, you know.
Yeah.
So it was basically mother and baby are fine, born at 10 p.m. or whatever. It was very brief.
That's great.
No, you up? What you doing tonight? LOL.
None of that.
Okay. Tell us all of the places you lived growing up and how many schools you went to, because you moved around a lot. And I feel like I remember you telling me you went to 4 different high schools. And I was like, huh? Like, I learned that when I was 16 or something. And so, and you're a military family. So I just am curious, can you take us high level through the timeline and everywhere that you guys went?
Yes. Came home from Germany, lived in Syracuse, New York for a couple years while Papa got his master's degree, and then we moved to,
what did he get his master's in?
It was kind of like an MBA, but I think it was in comptrollership, which means basically logistics and money and things like that.
Okay, continue.
And then we moved to Springfield, and he was at the Pentagon, and we were there from the time I was in kindergarten until through 7th grade. So that was our longest stint. And Aunt Bet was born during that time. And then after seventh grade, we had to move to New York. Kidder came with us to see me off. Kidder is my bestie friend from third grade. Love. And gosh, where was I? We moved to New York for 2 years. So I went to eighth grade at one school and then went to high school at another school. And then came back to Williamsburg, Virginia. Not really Williamsburg. We were on Fort Eustis, where Papa took over the 7th group. He was commander of the 7th group on Fort Eustis, but I went to Walsingham Academy in Williamsburg. So I went to 10th grade and 11th grade there. And then 12th grade, had to go back to Springfield because he was back at the Pentagon. So I went to West Springfield High School for my senior year.
And Walsingham Academy was an all-girls, no.
No, 9th grade. Mary Lewis Academy in New York was all girls. 10th and 11th, Walsingham Academy was co-ed.
Do you think all of the changing and adapting, like, do you think that that affected you growing up? Was it hard to always adjust to a new place and a new school? Like, I feel like I could see myself getting resentful of, like, my home base being moved all the time. Or were you just pretty go with the flow and understanding of where your dad needed to be?
Yeah, understanding might be a little generous. I certainly understood it intellectually, but I didn't particularly want to pick up and move at the end of 11th grade. And I could have stayed. I had a friend, family friends, and one of my good friends that offered to let me stay and graduate from Walsingham Academy. But Kidder was back in Northern Virginia by then. And she, of course, was saying, come on, Kidder, come on. And it would have been hard to live away from, you know, my family for a year. So, yeah, I went back to Springfield and finished out senior year. But it was hard. 3 high schools in 4 years. Yeah. It was challenging.
Do you feel like that made you, like, conscientious for, like, your own kids that you didn't want that or not necessarily?
100%. 100%.
Yeah,
once we moved in this house,
you didn't want to go.
I said, we are going nowhere. That's not true. I didn't say that at that moment. But once they started school and they were, you know, settled and making friends and all of that, I was pretty determined that we weren't going to do anything that would require them to move schools or anything like that. Yeah.
We almost moved to New York my junior year because Dad got a cool job offer and you guys were thinking about it. Seriously, isn't that right?
We did discuss it.
And I was like, let's move to the city.
Yeah, well, you were kind of into it.
Well, that's what I feel like my dad and I talk a lot about this. Like, because I never moved anywhere, I had the same, like, went to the same school with the same people, lived in the same house. Like, I was always game for, like, change and doing something new. Mm-hmm. While my dad did not have a very stable childhood, so was always moving. So he knew he did not want that for his kids. So I feel like it's like you always kind of want what you don't have. Yeah. Like, yeah. So it makes sense that you were more game maybe for like something right. new.
Yeah, but you were in high school by then, and I'm not sure when push came to shove if you really would have been willing to say, see ya.
See ya. Probably best that we stayed put. How did you know, and when did you know that you wanted to be a nurse?
Well, even in high school, I loved biology. I took AP biology. So I always knew I loved something along those lines, but then I went to college and there was a thing going on where registered nurses were being paid less than the Giant, which was our local grocery store, mm-hmm. Checkers, you know, that checked you out because they were unionized, I guess. So maybe they had some pull, and there were articles in the Washington Post that they were being paid more than the nurses. So, I was like, well, I'm not going to do that then. And so I got my degree in biology, which gets you really kind of nowhere unless you keep going to school. Mm-hmm. And moved to Atlanta with my friends because I wanted to live with my friends in Atlanta and work for a mortgage company. And that was not very fulfilling for me. And by then, I think things were turning around because, of course, there was then subsequently a big nursing shortage and all of that. So I decided I was going to do what I really felt like I wanted to do, and that was come back and go to nursing school.
But, like, as a kid, were you, like, putting Band-Aids on your Barbies? Like, how did you know you wanted to help people in that way and you were in a helping profession? Because that feels different to me than just biology.
But I think it's that fulfillment piece that you were talking
and
about.
And I don't
you
even...
You tried a job where you didn't feel fulfilled.
Yeah, yeah,
so
definitely was not in the mortgage industry world. Yeah, I guess maybe I was always kind of in that sort of helper mode. But not only that, I just loved the science of it. I loved all the anatomy and physiology and dissecting things and memorizing all the bones and the skeleton. And I don't know, I just loved all that.
We are such different people. I had such bad grades with science and math. It was just like not my shtick. And she's like, seriously, like none of my kids are going to do anything remotely related to what I do. Cool.
That's because dad made his kind of work look like fun. And I lost.
Yeah. Well, take your kid to work days different at the hospital versus like a big ad agency with like candy and like, you know, you tricycles and dogs and stuff. Speaking of dad, how did you meet dad?
Dad and I met. You know the story. You just want
well,
to hear
I don't.
It.
Oh.
The people have to hear it.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
I had
sorry.
It on my list of questions too.
Okay. Okay. Well, I was working in the coronary ICU.
And we want ages too. I want to know how old.
Oh, okay.
We need the details.
No, I met him at like 25, I think. 25, 26. Yeah, that's about right. And I was a new baby nurse in the KICU, had just graduated from nursing school and just getting started. And it's a pretty intense environment. So you had a preceptor, you know, with you for at least 3 or 4 months. And my preceptor was Judy Largen, and she was wonderful. We're still friends to this day. Mm-hmm. And she and her husband, Tim, were good friends with dad and some of his peeps. And she invited all of us to their Christmas party. So we drove out to Mannequin, where they were living.
There was probably nothing out there at that time.
Nothing. There was, yeah, they did live in a neighborhood out there, but it felt like we were driving to the country.
Yeah.
And went to their Christmas party, and dad was there with another date.
Classic.
Named Jill. And so he has better memories of this than I do. And apparently, as the story goes from him, he went up to Judy and asked if I would have his children. And she said to him, I'm not sure, but I wouldn't lead with that.
He went up to Judy and said, Who is that woman?
Oh my gosh. Who is that woman, and do you think she'll have my children?
I love it.
Yeah. It's true. I needed to make it more dad-like. And she said, well, I'm not sure, but her name's Mary Kay, and she works with me, but I wouldn't lead with that.
And then they went to another party on New Year's, like this exact time.
Yeah.
When you were however old, 25. And they were each other's New Year's kiss, and then...
Cute.
Yeah. Kissed a stranger, basically.
Yeah.
And apparently you lingered.
That's what he says. I don't remember lingering, but... And then the next day, Tim called Judy at work, because we were working on New Year's Day, and he said, we're just hanging out. What if we go to a movie after work? Because I think we were just working an 8-hour shift, because it was a holiday. So Judy and I got off work and...
Speak into the mic.
She is.
Sorry.
Like turning away, like looking.
I feel like Carter. My head on a swivel. Anyway.
So did you go to the movies?
So we went to the movies. Ask me what we saw.
Okay.
I don't remember.
That was what I was going to ask. It's okay. Must have been that
and
good.
Then...
Were you too busy playing tonsil hockey with dad?
No, really wasn't.
Gross.
But he did help me get rid of our Christmas tree.
That's nice.
Later that day or the next day or something. I don't remember, but yeah.
And the
and
rest
I was like,
is
well,
history?
That's very nice.
Well, the rest wasn't necessarily history, and that's the question I have, is my parents broke up twice before they got engaged. And I just want to hear a little, it could be high level, but like, what? He just couldn't get it together? What was the problem?
It was definitely all his fault.
Yeah.
And he's not here to defend himself. Yeah. So, no, I forget. The first time we broke up for I don't know, like a few weeks or something. It wasn't a big deal. And then the second time we broke up, and we were different. We were so different. I was much more introverted and serious, maybe. He was, you know, Dad, he was wide open. And that was just not me. So we had to adjust to each other. Mm-hmm. And I think, honestly, that we both sort of appreciated features of that in each other. But it still was kind of an adjustment. So anyway, yeah. And we broke up. Then we got back together. And then a year later, we broke up for like 9 months.
And then he wanted to take you out on your birthday.
He wanted to take me out on my birthday. After we were broken up. And I told him that I had plans on my birthday. Wait. Little offended that he thought I'd be sitting home waiting for him to take me out to dinner on my birthday.
Like, how ballsy is that?
Well, it was Dad. but yeah. So
you said no.
I said no. I already have plans. You know, maybe another time.
Okay.
So you left. So he asked me about another time. And he took me down to Indian Fields Tavern, which is, it's definitely not still under that name. I don't know if it's still there, but it's like halfway between Richmond and Williamsburg. Mm. It was a cute, like farmhouse kind of a restaurant that was really lovely and nice. And you sat in all the different rooms. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Patrons. Those are kind of... They sat in all the different rooms and even on the porch.
They seem, yeah, they're like kind of cozy because you have like kind of your own room, it feels like.
Yeah.
And did he say, Mary Kay, I've really been missing you a lot and blah, blah, blah. Like, was he laying it on thick or were you just like.
No, I think we were just having dinner kind of and having fun. And yeah.
Did you make out after?
Do we have to talk about that here?
Wait, you did because.
I did not say that.
You did.
Does not want that on the record.
You did because wasn't he driving the convertible and he like pulled over so you guys could have a little fun?
We're done with this subject.
Move on.
Oh my God, the people love it. And then eventually he grew up and he got it together and he said, tell me if I'm wrong. When you guys are broken up, he like kind of dated or was seeing ish one other girl. And he told someone eventually, like, I went one girl past the person I'm supposed to be with. And
that's deep.
It was you.
Oh, wow, that's funny. Did Dina or somebody like that tell you that? I don't think I even remember that.
You don't?
Mm-mm.
Yeah, no, Dad told me that himself.
Mm.
He just said it was very clear. He like was with this new person who's trying, I think he was trying to get over you. And he was like, yeah, I just knew. Like, I was like, I went one woman too far. Like, I had it right and I need to go back and fix it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I feel like that's good. I think that's good for the people to know that, like, no shame in going back. Like, if you, like, right, he figured it out, he knew, and then he wasn't, like, ashamed or afraid to, like, go back and ask you.
Yeah,
out.
But at that point, he had to get in the car and drive up and go talk to Mama and Papa.
That's true. Yeah.
But you liked him and you wanted him to grow up and get it together, right? Like, you were excited that he came back and said something.
Excited is a little, probably, strong word. Initially, I was a little. Not completely trusting or believing, you know. Not that I thought he was trying to do anything underhanded. I just didn't know if he really was capable of doing that, I guess.
Of what?
I don't know. Of just being committed and serious and all of that. I just wasn't sure. You know, we'd had our struggles and I didn't know if I trusted him again, you know. Because we had been broken up for 9 months. I was doing pretty good by then. So anyway. Then he was like, I think I need to go talk to your dad. And I said, I think you better take me with you because you going up there by yourself's not a good idea.
And he like fought her on it. And then they went up there. You guys talked to him. And the first thing Papa said, he was like, that's all well and good, Dean, but like it only matters what Mary Kay thinks. And she's like, then that is why I came with you.
Yeah. I just knew it was not wise for him to come by himself.
And then you got engaged, and many moons later, you were married and happy, and it all worked out.
It all worked out. Yeah, that was like end of summer, because we sat out on Mama and Papa's back patio and had this whole conversation. And so then we dated. We were And once that happened, he never really looked back. I could tell by then he was pretty serious. But anyway, so we dated through the fall. And then, yeah, it was early December. And he was singing with the Richmond Symphony Chorus in Handel's Messiah. And so we all went out to dinner. And he was just like, let's just have a big celebration in Richmond. And, you know, they can come and see Handel's Messiah. So I really didn't think much about it. But then we were at dinner before that. And he... before he had to run out the door, he dropped down to one knee and proposed in front of all those people. So he must have been fairly confident.
That doesn't shock me about Dean at all.
That doesn't shock me either. But yeah. But I was very surprised.
Well, that's fun.
Yeah, it was fun.
And it was in December?
It was in December. He said he didn't want it to be a Christmas present. It wasn't a Christmas present. This was...
okay. It was separate.
Separate, yeah.
Did you get other Christmas presents?
I did.
Hell yeah. Well, love that story. We love that Dad got it together, because here I am.
Here you
know?
Are. And the engagement party story. Remember? So Dad goes and sings. He said, well, basically, will you marry me? I said yes. He put the ring on my finger, gave me a kiss, hugged everybody and said, I gotta go. And he ran across. We weren't very far. We were downtown, so we had to run over to the... theater and like get ready to sing, and the rest of us went over and sat in the audience, and then we tucked everyone in afterwards and we drove down Monument to his apartment, and there was that big giant sign that said congrats Dean and MK, and it had white lights running around it. Yeah, so there we were, and people were driving up and down Monument and honking horns, and because you know there was no social media then. There weren't even really cell phones then. So we walked in their apartment, and there was, you know, 100 of our closest friends.
That's fun.
That's so cute, Mom.
That was very cute.
And obviously, well, we know, obviously, but you were married for how many years?
28 and a half.
Almost as old as myself. Uh-huh. And obviously, Dad got sick and passed in December 2019, so this is our fourth Christmas without him, and I was wondering if I could ask you a couple of questions about grief.
Sure.
Alex obviously can also chime in whenever she wants to, but what do you feel like the experience of losing Dad kind of, like, what are your main takeaways? And I feel like we all learned a lot, but do you feel like there's anything huge that you were taught or you take from it the most that feels overarching?
Oh gosh, there's just so much that you take away from it, because it's just a huge life lesson in loss. And, you know, we were just so blessed and fortunate up, you know, until he was diagnosed, we had lost Grandma and Grandpa, but they lived to ripe old ages, and not that it was okay, of course, but it was the natural sort of course of events, I guess. And then we still had Mama and Papa, who were, you know, still in good health, and we had two healthy children and a happy marriage, and we loved each other, and, you know, so I felt like, other than losing Grandma and Grandpa, we really hadn't been seriously sort of tested or, I don't know, challenged. We were living a great life, you know, until you're not. So, yeah, the lessons that you take away from that are just immense. You learn how to appreciate even small things. You learn how to live in the present day to day when you have somebody with a bad diagnosis and you know where it's going. You learn how to be more empathetic to other people, because it's not just words anymore. It's, you feel it in your heart, you know, when you see somebody else, you know, just suffering or going through that kind of loss. So, yeah, you learn a lot of things. I think I remember when he died telling you and Will that you would be changed forever by this. You know, it would change you to your core. It would just change you, you know. With how you looked at the world and how you dealt with the world and how you cared for and loved people. So some of that is the kind of stuff that when you read stuff about grief that, you know, people say that they wouldn't change because they've become such different people.
Mm-hmm.
I still feel like if I could go back and have him back, I would, you know.
Yeah.
Duh. I'm not there yet.
Yeah. Yeah, but it is like, it's like a superpower in a way. And again, mm-hmm. that's not to say that you wouldn't go back and change it and get rid of that superpower. But I feel like the strength and like you said, just changes like the outlook you have on life is really like a superpower that like other people just don't understand.
Yeah.
And don't have, you know, like.
Right. You can't have it unless yeah. you've done it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I like that. A superpower.
It is.
I haven't thought about it as a superpower, but that's a good way to.
It's like you said, it makes you more empathetic. It makes you stronger. It makes you mm-hmm. all those things that just mm-hmm. like gives you like extra boost that other people don't have.
We're all in the club that nobody wants to be in, and that's and I feel like that bonds you like nothing mm-hmm. else, because you're like, but we are here and we like don't have a choice to be here, so like
yeah,
it does feel very different when you're connecting with people that are like quote unquote in the club.
Yeah.
And that is why truly, like, I mean, it is not the only reason, but it's like a huge pillar of the reason I think that you were placed in my life mm-hmm. and meeting you when you had lost a parent and I had not experienced that, and like talking to you even still, like I wasn't there when it was freshly happening and like never got like the privilege to meet Chris, but to talk to you even about it like freshman year, I feel like we bonded or like just got closer because mm-hmm. of your mom and talking about your journey with losing her. And all, I just could see it in you from the beginning, like all those characteristics of being in the club, like I saw in you. I just didn't know like for myself what that would be like mm-hmm. and then for you to have like known my dad and like you guys like loved each other and for you to like walk me through that was very like, I feel very 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 fortunate to have had you, and like I'm sad that you understand in the way that you do, but like you cared for me and loved me like no one else did, because you just like knew all too well what it was like. And I think that was like very divine placement, and I don't know, ever since it's like that happens and then we're just like bonded in yep. a million more ways that it's like really hard to yeah. describe. So I don't know, that just always felt very like, I feel like you've said the same thing, it just feels very timely and purposeful that we're like in our
yep.
in each other's lives at that time. Mom, what, given all that, what advice would you give to someone who wants to know how to like better care for someone that's grieving? Because I feel like we had some people and we're like, yeah, you know, we wouldn't do that. And then like we'd do that differently. And I feel like we had a lot of takeaways.
Gosh, so many things. And it's hard to say because I think some things resonate with people differently. So I think what somebody sees as being cared for, somebody else might
mm-hmm.
you know, find intrusive. Or, you know, I think it's a little hard to make general statements, but I think some of the things are like people that just show up. And by show up, I don't mean in a bad, intrusive, unwelcome way, but I mean they just say, I'm gonna do this and make you food and drop it off next week, what night works, instead of saying things like, let me know what I can do to help. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty universal. I think a lot of people are aware of that, because
mm-hmm.
when someone's in a state of struggling or hardship or grief or whatever, they're never going to call somebody and say, hey, remember how you said to let you know mm-hmm. if I need something? Well, I need something. That nobody does that.
So yeah, just make
that.
The decision.
Yeah, just of. Sort of, hey, I've got some time tomorrow afternoon. What errands could I run for you? Or I'm going to the grocery store. What can I pick up for you? Things like that, just mm-hmm. really sort of intentional things. And those are kind of concrete things. The other things probably are, at least for me, were the people that would send a text message requiring no response.
Mm-hmm.
Just thinking about you, or sending a funny story about dad. Mm-hmm. Or things did you find to be helpful?
I was actually just talking about this with some friends last night, and they were saying how someone brought up someone's dad who had passed and they were cringing, like, mom, don't bring that up, like, you know, you never know. And I was like, honestly, I think it's a misconception. I actually think that bringing people up, you think that you're touching such a nerve. But it's like my favorite thing when people tell me stories about dad. And it just, like, to me, I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm not the only one missing him. And he's not mm-hmm. forgotten. Like, it reminds me that, like, he's still, his spirit is very much alive and in people's hearts and minds. And when they choose to be vulnerable and share that with me, like, it means so much to me. It's actually not intrusive at all.
Yeah, it's never. It's like the people that are not afraid to talk mm-hmm. about your loved one with you, or bring up their name, or remember a story, or remember that time, you know. Yeah, that's huge, because you're right. It just reinforces that you're not the only person, or your family is not the only ones that are missing them. I had a really interesting email from a guy that worked for Mullen up in, is that Boston?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And was kind of a counterpart of dad's up there. And they knew each other through work for some years. And I remember him being kind and thoughtful and sending something, messages, I don't know what all. But when dad passed, and I remembered the name just from dad talking about folks in general, but didn't know him well, obviously. And I just got an email from him this week saying that he was asking about, hoping that our family was doing well, and that he thinks about Dean all the time. Mm-hmm. And he has since lost two more friends to GBMs. Mm-hmm. And he has been trying to, I guess, get into, I guess you have to qualify or something, into the Boston Marathon.
Yeah.
And so he's doing it with someone in running to raise money for cancer research. Mm. I don't know that it's specifically brain cancer, but he's running and asked if it was okay that he is running in memory of these three friends of his mm. that all died of GBM, and asked if it was okay. Mm-hmm. And I thought, that is so kind and mm-hmm. thoughtful. A, that you still miss him with us, mm-hmm. and B, that you even think to ask if it's okay with me, you yeah. know. And I answered him. I was like, of course it's more than okay. And I just so appreciate you reaching out and remembering him. And anyway, it was just really, really kind and thoughtful.
Do you have any, Girk, like, things that come to mind that we didn't say?
No, I feel like I agree with you of just, like, just do it. Like, don't do the generic, like, let me know if there's anything I can do. Like, just do it. Well, 'cause whatever it is, like, will not offend me. Like, you buying me groceries, you know, sending me the text, like, right? It's just, like, it only means that you're thinking of me, and that only means I feel loved. So, like, right. just do it, I feel like. People that are, like you said, too hesitant or, like, nervous to, like, strike a nerve, like, mm-hmm. you're not. Just do it.
Mm-hmm. And people aren't, I don't think they're trying to do anything intentionally. Agreed. I think they're just not sure of what to do, and they don't want to offend. And I think sometimes you just, yeah, I mean, you just write somebody a note.
Yeah.
You just acknowledge, mm-hmm. you know, in whatever way that feels okay, yeah. that really doesn't require a lot in return.
Alex and I have always said, like, I feel like a really easy way to be a good friend to someone who has lost someone, and maybe you just haven't experienced that yet, or, like, in that same way, it's, like, really easy to just, like, Google the day they died, or, like, Google their birthday on the internet and add it into your calendar and send that person a text. Like, mm-hmm. it takes 2 seconds, and it's so incredibly thoughtful and intentional to do. And I feel like that has gone a really, really long way. And you can tell the friends that put it in their calendar and, like, make a 60-second effort to, like, reach yeah. out to you. I feel like dates like that can be really meaningful too.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah, definitely. There are definitely the handful of people that have that date
mm-hmm.
marked.
Mm-hmm. Okay, sorry, I'm deciding between questions. How do you think that our relationship has evolved since dad, pre-sickness and, like, loss, and then post?
Wow, that's just a big question.
Sorry, you can veto.
Well, not veto so much. You know, I think it's evolved for a variety of reasons, not just, you know, losing dad, but gosh, the 4 years, you've grown up 4 years and become a more mature adult. You had to grow up bless your heart, you just barely graduated and you were thrown into caregiving mode. And it wasn't just Dad. You know, we had Mama and Papa move to Richmond. And then Papa's health, you know, start to go downhill. And then subsequently he died. And then Mama, and we lost her. And, you know, we lost both my parents and Dad in the span of like 3 years. Mm-hmm. And it was like, we felt like whack-a-moles, you know. I mean, we just couldn't even see straight, our family. So, I think our relationship changed as we marched through all of that together, and everybody's grief is different. Relationships are different. You lost your father. I lost my husband. But, you know, you still walk alongside each other, and, you know, you're so insightful, and I always thought you were a little bit wise beyond your years in things like that. And I remember just being sort of like, wow, how did you think of that? You know? So anyway, I think we just got closer and we held each other above water there for a while, you know?
Yeah. 'Cause we were we were both living here while Dad was sick. And I think that's a lot, it's a lot of like shared memories under one roof, you know? That, yeah. Is compounding over time as well. Like, I feel like we have a lot of similar, like, scary or sad or happy memories during that time. Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of them were together just because we were all, like, living here.
Yeah. And I don't know, golly, it would have been so much harder without you living here, you know, for the times when he couldn't drive because of the seizures, and when he couldn't really be left alone, and I was still trying to work, and we're trying to get him to clinical trials and drive to Duke. And I mean, it was huge. It was huge having you here. So I felt really fortunate that you weren't, you know, living in California or something crazy like that, because it certainly could have happened.
Yeah. I think trauma bonding is real. Like, I don't know. It's like, I really can't even put into words how close I feel to you. And I was close to you before, but it's like, I don't have to like explain to you any part of that situation. Like, it was your lived experience as well. Like, and we experience it through different lenses, obviously, because he's a different person to you than he is to me. But like, it's just like the sharedness of like not having to explain. You just know, you just like know so much of it in your own way that, I don't know, I just feel like those moments that are difficult for me were like also really difficult moments for you. And there's just like the lack of explanation is actually really, it's just like a gift that you don't have to like reinvent the wheel with certain people. Right. And you're not one of those people. Like, we share so much of that stuff and we can talk about it and bond over it as needed.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. And sometimes that feels so much, it's just not so exhausting, you know, especially early on. You're right. Just even the explanation or no words were needed, you know.
I was curious because I also feel like since Dad has passed, we've had more people in our periphery or like more in our direct community or your groups of friends that have had husbands that have had like the exact same thing Dad had and since passed, or you've just had friends that have gone from like your married friends to widows and like walking the journey that you're walking as well. And I was just curious if you had any like widow specific advice for people who have lost a spouse far beyond the time that they thought they were going to lose a spouse. Like, you didn't think that you weren't going to retire and grow old with Dad, and you had to like recalibrate and readjust your life and your expectations. And like, I'm curious if you have any thoughts or like advice for people maybe going through that same season.
Yeah, because it's just such shock and awe at the beginning. I think the advice is that you just sort of hold on and keep pedaling. I remember reading this grief analogy about, it's like a shipwreck and the storm comes and it takes out the ship, and you're surviving holding on to a piece of, you know, wood in the ocean and the storm is there and the waves are crashing over you and you can barely get a breath and you're just holding on for dear life. And then as time goes on, slowly, so slowly, there's just a little bit more time in between the waves. They still come and crash over you, but you maybe have an extra 15 seconds to catch your breath. And it just keeps on going like that until the waves back off just a little bit and you get just a little bit more time. And so you end up being able to hold on and breathe and survive. And it was such a good sort of analogy for me because I'm such a visual person. I can sort of visualize that as what grief looks like. And so I think a lot of times it's just you just have to hold on and put one foot in front of the other and accept help and pray that you've got good friends. And family walking along beside you, you know, and not everybody has that.
Yeah.
You also joined a widows group, and I think that has brought you some peace, right? Like getting around other people who have walked your path.
Yeah, at church they started, a woman there started a widows group, which we still haven't rebranded, but it's accurate.
It's due for a rebrand.
Yeah, and she had lost her husband, like, gosh, I think she was like on year 10 or something and basically had four young children oh. when her husband died suddenly. And yeah, I don't know how she did it, but she's an amazing person and she's so lovely and kind and wonderful mm-hmm. and insightful and thoughtful and all of those things. And she'd been wanting to do it for a while. And so she just started this little group out at Hope. And so it's, you know, some older women, some younger, not super young, but some that are a little bit younger than me. And then anyway, and it's just wonderful, wonderful women who all have, you know, stories to tell. One woman in the group lost two husbands.
Oh my goodness.
Anyway, but it's just a very understanding group. Mm. You know, you don't have to explain a lot. You know, everybody sort of gets it. So anyway, and we just get together once a month or even more than once a month. We'll do some spontaneous things.
I feel like that speaks very much to the power of female friendship, which Alex will do a TED talk on the power of like adult sleepovers. And that means just like sleepovers with your friends. and the power of female friendship. We feel very passionate about it. And I've told countless people, just like, I think your friends are like incredible and you have so many. And I think that's such a testament to who you are and how you're a friend to people. Because of the way that your friends surrounded you and lifted you up and encouraged you. You could have easily just, I think one of the things that impresses me about you the most and I admire about you the most is you just could have, people react to this in a range of ways and none of them are invalid. Like, it's also valid if you didn't get off the couch for a year, or like didn't felt so lost and at sea. And I just feel like you also knew that that is not what Dad wanted for you. Like, he wanted so much more for you. And you, I just feel like, also had these beautiful female friendships who came around you and cooked for us for months and months and months and like went on walks with you and talked with you and like you guys went out to dinner and you take trips and you do yoga and pickleball and all these things. And like, you have such a beautiful community of women who like walk alongside you in any season that you're in. And I just feel like you are as thriving as you could be for someone who this has happened to them and they've lost their spouse at a very inopportune time. And I just feel like I'm so grateful to your friends for that and how much they've loved and cared for you. And it just is also a hugely admirable quality in you to see just like how full still your life is and how you are, I guess, pivoting maybe is the word like I can use, and maybe there's a better one, but in the best way you possibly know how, like the way that you've moved, not moved on, just the way that time has passed and the way that you've chosen to move forward is astonishingly impressive to me. And it's hard to know how one would react to it, but I just think it says so much about your character and so much about who you surround yourself with too.
Thank you for that. First of all, I do have an amazing group of friends, and you are correct. Your women friends are the ones who you know, come and put food in your refrigerator and lift you up and just do all kinds of things that you can't do for yourself initially.
Drink tequila.
Drink tequila and I guess. but I would agree with that. And, you know, people always say, and I guess sometimes this can be like, well, what am I supposed to do? You know, people will be like, oh, you're so strong and you know, things like that. And you think about that because I've had this conversation with other widows and yeah, I just, it's like, what do you do? Is crawling and going and curling up in the corner, is that an option? I never saw that as an option. My children were grown up. You guys were grown, but you still were just felt so vulnerable to me, you know. You still lost your dad at such a young age. I knew how much I needed, you know, my parents when I was your age. And so you don't just grieve the loss for yourself. You grieve the loss of that your children, you know, mm-hmm. Your parents are only as happy as their least happy child. And when you watch your children suffering, it's like double grief mm-hmm. because it's not just your own sadness, but it's your sadness for them and their suffering. And so I just really felt compelled to sort of pick yourself up and you just have to kind of carry on and carry that torch. And again, that's something that I knew, you know, Dad would want me to do because he loved you guys immeasurably also. And A, would have done the same thing had the situation been reversed, and B, you don't want to see your children suffer, and there's really nothing you can do about it except maybe try to keep putting one foot in front of the other so they're not then worried about you too.
You did amazing. You slayed that question. I'm pivoting a little bit. What do you love most about being a mom? Or you can start with the cons.
No, I'm not going to start with the cons. Oh my gosh, there are no cons. Maybe when you were 16, there's a few, but no, for me, there's no cons. There's no cons. What do I love most about being a mom? Well, it's different when you're a mom of big kids. Mm-hmm. You know, even having Carter, it just floods you with all those memories of when those babies were put into your arms. And there is just nothing like it in the world. There's just nothing like it. You love your children like, it's just so hard to explain. They're part of you. They're part of your heart. You would do anything in the world for them. You would, yeah, throw yourself in front of the train, whatever. I don't know. But I loved being a mom. And I loved when you guys were little. I loved when you could actually dress yourself, that was good too. When you got out of the threes, that was good. No.
Yeah, what was Kate like as a small child?
She was stubborn. So cute. Gosh, she had those bouncy blonde curls mm-hmm. and those big blue eyes. And Mama used to always say, and sometimes it takes other people to see your children because you're just so in the thick of it, you know. And she always made the observation about Kate that she was so persistent. Like mm-hmm. if you brought her like a craft project or a coloring project or something like that, she would sit down and even from an early age, and she would sit there for an hour and work on it and focus on it until she finished it. She just was so, most little kids don't have that kind of an attention span, you know. Anyway, but you were just the cutest thing, and those bouncy curls and little round cheeks and
And then I turned brunette.
Yeah, you did. Your hair did darken up over time, but you spent some years as a blonde.
Real blonde.
Real blonde.
And really curly.
Really curly.
You'd never recognize me.
Nope. Lots of cute baby pictures. I'm looking at one right up there in the bookcase on the very top shelf.
So your favorite thing is that you love us so much? Like you didn't really name a specific.
I didn't really answer that question.
It's okay.
I understood it.
I'm just being me.
Was learning and understanding this whole new level of love that you never knew you were capable of. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Never crossed my mind. that's how much you love your children. It made me look at my parents differently. It made me look at my own mother differently. Like, oh, I get it now. But also,
I think that's a great answer.
You answered. Alex is defending you. That's a great answer. When you get to pie in the sky, I'm like, right, but like, what are the bullet points? Like, what do you actually mean?
I do kind of get pie in the sky sometimes.
No, I think that was a beautiful answer. Thank you, Alex. Do you think she's going to say? Like, being woken up in the middle of the night? Like,
yeah, that was not my favorite part. For sure.
What do you wish that you could tell your 20-something-year-old self, knowing what you know now?
Oh, my gosh.
Talking to the mic.
Relax. Take a breath. It's all okay. One day at a time, it all sort of evolves as it is supposed to.
You really believe that?
I do.
Even for me?
I believe it very much for you.
I think that's great advice.
Yeah. You're so impatient in your 20s.
Yeah.
You're just so impatient. You want things to happen yesterday. You're just chop, chop, chop. What's next? What's next? What's next? And it's really, you need to try not to make it about what's next all the time. Mm-hmm. It needs to be what's happening now and here and today and enjoying the fire and the, you know, whatever.
My friends and I said last night, we were like, no, like, these really are the good old days.
These are the good old days.
And relish in them. It doesn't mean other parts of life aren't great either, but it's like, I'd be so sad if I squandered them and just kept trying to go to the next thing.
Very true. Very true. When you're so focused on the future, you do not pay attention to the present. Mm-hmm. And before you know it, it's lost and gone in the past. Then it's in the past. And you're right. These are the good old days.
Alex, do you have any questions for my mom that I did not ask that you would like to ask?
We got to most that I was thinking. I don't mean to put you on the spot, so it's okay to say you don't know. But I didn't know if there was a story that Kate doesn't know, whether that's like her as a child, like you and Dean. I don't know. Is there like a story that you think that Kate doesn't? You as like a teenager? I don't know.
Oh my gosh.
I'm really putting you on the spot. So.
Well, yeah. I just don't know. I don't know if I feel like I have good, exciting secret stories.
I think we both have bad memories.
I think.
What about
right.
The other way around? Kate, do you have a story that your mother does not know?
Not that I want to share.
And I told you, yeah, I spent the night on a aircraft carrier. I told you that story.
The hell?
Okay, it sounds like that's
yes,
the story.
Kidder and I and Bows, her parents graciously, when we were in high school, Kidder's my friend from third grade. And for whatever reason, I don't know why, those kind and wonderful second parents to me, they invited me to go along on their trip to Europe because Captain Walsh was in the Navy and he was a Navy captain and deployed on the USS America, which was stationed over in the Bay of Naples in Italy. And so they were flying over to spend, I think it was 3 weeks in Europe doing some touring and visiting Captain Walsh. And for some reason, they invited me to come along.
Because you're the bestie.
Well, we were teenagers then. I'm sure we drove them crazy. But anyway, they were awesome. And we have so many fun memories from that trip that we look back and laugh about. But the funny story was when we were in Naples, Captain Walsh wanted us to come out, of course, and see the ship. And it was a big aircraft carrier. And so we rode a boat out. And getting onto an aircraft carrier is something. They're big. And the water was getting a little rough. And we got over onto the ship. But at one point, the aircraft carrier's here, which, of course, is pretty stable. This smaller boat that had brought us over kind of got swished away by a wave, and Mary Kay was over the
split.
Midshipman on one side, and not midshipman, that's in the Naval Academy, but whoever.
Wait a minute.
You were like
over there and on the boat, and anyway, they of course pulled me right into.
Were you in the sea?
No, but I was
like, you're two legs.
When you look down, I saw ocean instead of boat.
One leg was on one.
No.
No, I was. It was more like a suspended sort of situation.
I see.
The whole point was we got onto that aircraft carrier, and we ended up having to spend the night because the water was so rough they couldn't get us off, and lots of the they were on shore leave, so the XO his cabin was empty. Because he was on shore leave. And so, yeah, the three of us got to sleep in the XO's cabin. And they get fed us dinner. And they played games with us. That's where we learned to play AC Deucey and backgammon.
Was anybody cute?
I'm sure.
I don't think so. But we were 16-year-old girls. Yeah. So they were happy to entertain us, I think. Some of those younger.
That's
and then
fun.
The next day, it was time for us to leave. And it was still too rough. And so we left in a helicopter. Yeah, helicopter came, landed on the ship.
Quite a vacation.
And took us back to...
It's giving rich?
It was giving the United States Navy did not want to be responsible for the loss of civilians.
It's definitely giving that.
That's what it was giving. So that's my... you're at a party, tell somebody something they would never guess about you, and... That's my answer. I spent the night on an aircraft carrier.
That's insane. I did not know that.
You didn't know that story? Okay. There you go.
I love it.
That's my story that Kate didn't know.
Yeah.
What's the drunkest you've ever been?
Oh my gosh, Kate. I don't know.
Just try.
I'm sure it was sometime when I was in college.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. We drank in college. It was legal then.
What was your preferred alcohol?
Preferred or what was readily available?
Touché.
Yeah. Nickel beers and grain punch at fraternity parties and stopping at Hector's and get a Greek grilled cheese on the way back to the sorority house. And, but I don't know that there's a specific time that I can recall.
Well, that's the irony. You wouldn't recall it, maybe too.
Well, there's the irony in your question.
Touché. Well, Mom, I love you so much. I just can't stand it. And I'm so glad that you chatted with us. And I just think everybody's going to love you.
Well, thank you so much.
like, why am I ending the podcast?
No, but you can edit this, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so glad about that. Yeah, I'm not sure how if the people are really going to find this so fascinating, but I'm glad we've got it for your purposes.
Me too. But you're way more interesting than you give yourself credit for, so.
Well, thanks. That's generous.
Well, all right. I guess that's all.
That's all.
Is that a wrap?
That's a wrap.
Sweet. No cap. That's a wrap.
No cap. That's a wrap.
Perfect.
Bye. Say bye.
Bye.